everyone. This is William Del Pilar with Big John. And tonight on the docket, we have the NFL and its free agency and quarterbacks. Matt Ryan, Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston. What a name, James is. That's how you spell it.
William, I believe it's pronounced Jameis.
Whatever. Yeah. Jameis. No, I apologize. Jameis. People always mispronounce
or
my name.
Jameis. Right.
I always say Jameis.
And that's the way it's spelled, so I get it.
Yeah, and whoever else is left on the market, we're going to briefly talk about them too. There's just two main quarterbacks still left, Garoppolo and Mayfield. And finally, Mr. Kneeler himself, Colin Kaepernick, is back on the docket or back in the news. So, Big John, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, William. This quarterback carousel keeps swinging and turning on us. I can almost hear the circus music playing in the background. You know.
In your 25, 30, however long, since I've been watching football since I was a kid in the NFL.
Yep.
I cannot remember an offseason with this much impact. Usually you'll get a Deshaun Watson type newsmaker once in the offseason. But I mean, we've had quite a few moves, and we're going to talk about them.
Yeah.
Guess what I'm trying to say is I believe this is one of the most exciting offseasons to go hand-in-hand with what I call a great comeback season for the NFL last year.
Right, and I'm trying to avoid what's known as recency bias. You know, that's the tendency humans have, that whatever's the newest – is what you think is the best. So I get that. But the truth of the matter is this has been pretty exciting, as you said, especially in terms of the quarterbacks, but even more so the fact that there's trading going on. It's not just free agent signings, right? We had Wentz get traded. We had Watson get traded, technically traded. Matt Ryan got traded.
Garoppolo's going to be traded.
That's something to talk about now, isn't it? But
that's right.
Yeah,
a little preview. So let's get right down to it. Okay, so first on the docket is the Falcons trade Matt Ryan to the Colts. Let me break down the trade here real quick for you, Big John.
Sure.
The Falcons received the Colts' third-round pick, number 82 overall.
Right.
That's pretty much the trade.
Straightforward.
The Falcons are taking a $40.5 million dead cap hit, and it's only a $9 million savings. Now, before the meeting, Ryan met with the Colts on Saturday night. The trade happened Monday, I believe. He met with them Saturday night. He wasn't angry, but like anybody with an ego, it was a little bit miffed that the talk was with Deshaun. So his thought process was, do I really want to play with the Falcons? Not in a negative way as much as this team wants to rebuild. Do I want to be
right.
I mean, along those lines. So they shipped them off. The Colts picked up Ryan's $7.5 million roster bonus. They added guarantees, and they're keeping it as a 2-year deal, which still has about $54 million. Ryan has a $24.7 million cap hit this upcoming season. That's high but affordable in terms of the team's overall scheme, and a $29.2 million cap hit in 2023. First of all, Big John, what do you think about the trade? And second, how long do you think he lasts?
Yeah, those are both interesting questions. So the trade makes sense to me. And listen, if you wanted to do a blueprint of how professionals behave in these situations, look at Matt Ryan. Not only did he not have a tantrum, say, a la Baker Mayfield.
That's immaturity.
Yeah, that's immaturity. Absolutely.
That's about. He was 13 now when Mayfield when Ryan in 2008. So there's a 10-12 year difference.
Oh, at least. But that's what I'm saying. Here's a difference, right? Ryan actually accommodated the Falcons because that roster bonus was due the Thursday, and he agreed to put it off until the Falcons found out if they could get Watson. So, first of all, he didn't have to do that, Matt Ryan, right?
But
he was a gentleman, but he was also smart because he said, listen, if they trade for Watson, I'm riding the bench. So what's in my best interests as well? So he had a mutually thing. They put it off till Tuesday. So that was professional on Ryan. He never badmouthed the Falcons. He never said, if they get Watson, I'm pissed. Nothing like that. Second, the Colts. give them credit. Even though this is a carousel for them, it seems every year, five quarterbacks in 5 years. Here's the problem. Here's the good thing. I used to be on Wall Street, right? I used to be a trader on Wall Street. The hardest thing for the layman to do in the stock market is say, I lost money, I'm cutting my losses, I'm dumping this bad stock, and I'm moving on.
Right.
That is the hardest thing for anyone to learn to do, because sometimes you just cut your losses. The Colts cut their losses with Carson Wentz, and they didn't sit around and cry and say, look, we spent the first and the third, I guess we got to keep them, or, you know, oh, we're going to pay again for another quarterback. No. They said, here's the situation we're in. We don't want Wentz. He's not a leader. He's a loser.
That was a hooky with Wentz. It has something to do with his lack of locker room leadership.
Right. So they said, okay, let's bring a proven commodity, somebody who's been to the Super Bowl, right, Matt Ryan, and has professionalism in class. Let's bring him on. We're paying a third. Now, it's a good deal all the way around. The Colts didn't give up too much, but also I kind of disagree with you a little bit. The Falcons saved the $9 million this year. They're taking a dead money hit, but then they're done.
Oh, right. Well, hold on. What did I say that was negative? That's just a fact.
I'm saying it's not a negative. But also, don't forget,
shows piss poor salary cap management.
Well,
play this game. It gets old, you know?
Listen, it's just like the government, William. It's just like the federal government. You're going to postpone the debt as long as you can until it hits you like a ton of bricks.
It's banana world government because New England
us, by the way.
Don't have that problem.
That's us. That's us. Yeah. We're a banana republic when it comes to economics.
Some teams don't have those issues, and the Patriots come to mind.
The Patriots, the Bills, like Shane, Brandon Bean and Shane now with the Giants, they have that philosophy. What did Shane do? He's like, I'm not spending money. I need to cut $40 million. I don't care if we have a lousy team this year. That's how you build, right?
Right, and I give him credit for actually coming out. Big John, when was the last time you actually heard a general manager and head coach go, we are in a rebuilding phase?
It's very rare. It's very rare.
Well, actually, but it wasn't rare back in the
no, I'm saying now.
Now it's really rare.
It's completely rare. But I like the Ryan trade. How long is he going to stay in Indianapolis? I think
First of all, Big John, can he make the throw still? Did you hear me? Can he make the throws?
I did. I'm trying to think of a good answer. Listen, I think he can make most of the throws. He's obviously lost something. You could tell from watching him play. Now, how much of that was him getting beat up? I don't know. He's going behind a better offensive line in Indianapolis. He's got a great running back, Jonathan Taylor. That solves a lot of problems for quarterbacks, believe me. But I'm concerned that they have no playmakers. Real playmaker. I know Michael Pittman Jr. is supposedly on the rise. I'm not sure he's a wide receiver one, to be honest.
He's at the receiver core. Yes. Yeah.
The tight ends are nothing to – like Mo Alie-Cox and Jack Doyle retired. Alie-Cox is not – I mean, he's solid, but he's not a game breaker. Nobody's afraid of him. He's not going to –
Right. Their team is not yet there. See, that's the big misnomer that my research has pointed out. I think – I can't remember what game, but towards the end of the season, maybe one of those two debacles they had. But it's like Wentz was sacked like 9 times. You know, Taylor –
there's the Jaguars.
Jonathan Taylor was held to like 60 yards. It's easy to put the blame on Wentz. But they have issues with their offensive line, and they've got to get their scheming much better. And part of the problem, I believe, is Frank Reich, who also calls the plays. Either be the freaking head coach or call the plays. But the downside of that is we just had a Super Bowl with two boy geniuses who call their own plays. But that's still the exception. And I think that's kind of burnt Frank over. Be a head coach, evaluate your players, because you're doing something wrong when you can't convince Andrew Luck to stay, and then you go through retread, and then your young guy all of a sudden decide isn't a leader. Yet that's the first. I researched Carson Wentz. I did not find anything negative in terms of a lack of leadership ability. So I'm not saying I don't believe them, but as an outsider looking in, I start to question. Everybody's looking at the quarterback position. You know, nobody's looking at the head coach who calls his own plays. The offensive line.
I'm less critical of Frank Reich, but I'm more critical of journalists, media, or whatever, crowning the Colts. I look at the Colts. They're a solid team, but they're not a team that's on the verge. They're not that team that needs one or two players to get into exactly. that. Like, they're a solid team. But look,
they need help all over the place. And when I say all over, not just positions, but the coaching staff needs to get its head out of its tush.
Yeah, but look even in their own division. Are they better than the Titans?
No, they are on par with the Titans, though. And that's only because of Tannehill. You know, Tannehill is kind of like, here are the Titans. But when you add Tannehill to the equation, it's like, here's good. Tannehill kind of brings you right to that edge, you know, where, okay, Derek, we need you to bail us out.
Right. But at least the Titans seem to have a better – they have probably a better defense overall. Their quarterback play has been better, if not tremendously better. Tannehill's been better than what Indianapolis has been rolling out. They've got a stud wide receiver. For some reason, the Colts still think T.Y. Hilton is a good receiver. And that he's
I know. Right? See, and that's what I mean by the front. When I say front office, I'm talking both head coaching and management. And I get sick and tired when people try to put the blame completely on one. Hey, I had never seen a job, and I'm sure, unless it's a complete personality conflict, and odds are the following year will be different people, I have never heard of a head coach not having input with the general manager and players. So when somebody says T.Y. Hilton sucks or whatever, and I agree, you know, who do you blame? You blame them both. You know?
Yeah, like who?
You've been the front office for the player evaluation with the coaching staff for still keeping them on roster.
And FYI, throw the owner in that too.
Oh my God, yeah.
Right? I mean,
Thursday when he's not sticking the bubbly.
Well, I'm not going to get into that, but I will say that, you know, when you have an owner that, for example, doesn't want to spend money, doesn't like certain types of players potentially, you know, from a PR perspective. So you may have, and I'm not saying that's the case with the Colts, but you said GM and coach. I would also throw in ownership as being part of that.
No, I agree. You know, I think the head coach I think that decision to get rid of Wentz was a complete buy-in by the front office, the coaching staff, and the owner had to pull the trigger to go, okay, trade him. Because remember, they gave up a first round pick. Yeah,
that Jaguars game made it impossible for Wentz to come back. Like losing to the Raiders, look, they had two games left. All they needed to do was win one, and they were in the playoffs.
I agree with you, Big Joe, but come on. How much of it is the play calling, the inconsistent play of the offense?
No. I'm saying the way things shook out, Wentz was not coming back after.
Right. Wentz became the scapegoat. See, that's my issue.
Exactly.
It's partially his fault, but he's been made to be the complete scapegoat. Look, yeah. I watched Jonathan Taylor play twice. You know, so I didn't get a great feel for him, but I saw enough to realize, oh, he's not the exceptional back everybody says he is. He's a great back, a great young back with some talent there, but he's not going to blow me away as the next Earl Campbell. I don't care what people say. I did not see that on
the field. He's not an Earl Campbell, but he's a very
good talking about he's a big physical back who has moves. So what I'm trying to say is I'm not saying he's stuck in the middle of the pack. But I'm not saying he's not Derrick Henry is what I'm saying.
Yeah, fair enough.
And that's important because they began to rely on him last year like he was Derrick Henry. And all you do is lessen his career, his shelf life.
Right. They put a lot on his shoulders. But that's
he couldn't perform. I mean, look, you can blame Wentz. But he carried the ball, too, against the Jags, didn't he? It was held to 66 yards.
Right, because at that point they just decided they were stopping Taylor no matter what. So anyway, there's a lot of blame to go around. The problem I have is, will Matt Ryan be in a position to survive? So obviously we have to wait till after the draft. We have to wait for whatever.
Hold on. Did they have a first round pick this year?
No, I know, but we still have to wait till after the draft. That's what I'm saying. We have to wait for those post June 1 cuts where sometimes you get a veteran to come in, you know. Look, there's a lot of players out there that are still free agents that might be able to help. But look, defensively, you pop a Bobby Wagner, who's still a free agent, surprisingly enough. You pop a Bobby Wagner in there with Darius Leonard.
Oh, I love Darius Leonard. You know why? He's a conservative.
I don't know if he is or not, but my point is he's a great player.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal player.
And you take someone like Bobby Wagner, who's also a phenomenal player, you put him next to Leonard. All of a sudden, that linebacking core – looks amazing, you know?
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, they are not one piece away, but to me, they're more than a few, but they're not a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not.
But here's the other issue, Big John.
Yeah.
They play in one of the weakest divisions in the NFL. Hell, for the last 10 years, it's been one of the weakest.
I wouldn't disagree with that. Yeah.
So that does two things. It makes them too soft to, once the playoff rolls around, they get rolled. Or because the NFL is a game of attrition, they remain the healthiest. You know, because I do believe Matt Ryan can take them to the Super Bowl. Look, the downside to Matt Ryan is one, the Atlanta Falcons, a team that are perpetual losers. He was there 14 seasons, Big John. How many were above 500? Seven. Oh,
yeah,
500.
Okay.
Yeah, 500. Yeah, them, so the question that you have to ask yourself, is it Matt Ryan or was it the Falcons? And my take is, based off the history, it's the Falcons. Because when that team had players and receivers, he had them going to the Super Bowl. Look, I don't blame Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan lives in the era where they no longer call plays. In fact, very rarely do they even get the audible anymore. So the reason he is holding, wearing a Super Bowl, in fact, they don't wear Super Bowl loser rings. They kind of tuck them away in the closet. The reason he has one of those is because of Kyle Shanahan. You know, so I believe with better coaching, he'd be a Super Bowl winner right now. And on a better team, he could maybe have multiple Super Bowls. I think he's that good. I don't think he's lost too much, just that natural age. But now here's where they're not going to like hearing this, Colts fans. Look, you may not have liked Wentz, but Wentz was mobile. He can move. He can move in and out of that pocket. Phillip Rivers was a brick, you know, and that's what you're getting with Matty Ryan. You're getting another brick. And Andrew Luck was a brick, but he was a young brick who could run people over. So, you know, one reason I believe he retired.
Yeah, Luck could move. Luck could move. But,
But Luck, the problem with Luck, and one reason I think he did retire, he was getting beat up, a lot of hits. He talked about that. But, dude, the guy did not know how to slide early on, and it looked like what's it called when those players, they're looking for somebody to hit. That was kind of like Andrew Luck running at times. But anyway, a couple of issues I want to ask you on Matt Ryan. So do the Colts have the offensive line to protect him?
Yes.
Okay. Is he still upper echelon, Matt Ryan?
No.
No, okay.
He's upper echelon. Now, let me define.
Let me define upper echelon for you. Top 10. Is he a top 10 NFL quarterback?
If he is, it's number 10.
Gotcha. All right. He's 37. Do you think we're going to see a regression fall off quickly, or do you think he's going to be a Brady? And you know,
he's not going to be a Brady. He's not going to be a Brady.
Well, I'm talking about for this year, next year, for 2 years.
For 2 years, he'll be confident for 2 years.
Yeah, but he'll be 39.
He needs help. He needs help around him badly.
But I look at it this way, Big John, is he survived Atlanta. It's a terrible team. So my take is, no matter how bad the Colts are, it's an upgrade. Okay, his last winning season was 2017. He had no receiver core. Outside of Kyle Pittman, is his receiver core with Indianapolis better or worse than the Falcons?
Worse. It's worse with the Colts.
Yeah, because at least the Falcons had Kyle Pittman.
You had Kyle Pitts, the tight end.
Oh, Kyle Pitts.
Michael Pittman is the guy on the end. Yeah, but they don't forget, they also had Calvin Ridley up until he got
but that was around week 6 or 7, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. But generally speaking, Ridley was there, and up until 2 seasons ago, he always had Julio Jones. So in Atlanta.
Yeah, but I mean, you're right. Technically, he was signed a contract and on the Atlanta Falcons, but he did not always have it, which is why I would use it. You know, when I watched, when they had their Super Bowl years or those playoff years, rather, even back then, I'm looking at it like, don't get hurt. Don't, because I was rooting for, you know, I'm rooting for the underdog teams, my town. All righty. And the final question.
Yeah.
Running back position, upgrade or not?
Oh, yeah, well.
Cordell Patterson versus Jonathan Taylor.
Listen, Patterson just re-signed with them.
I know, but we're comparing.
Jonathan Taylor is the better running back. There's no doubt. But that's because Cordarrelle Patterson, even though he lines up in the backfield, I don't consider him a running back. He's like He's like a slash, you know, like the
old. No, I get it, but technically speaking, they assume Cordell was a top running back. Which, and the reason I said it is because it really shows how bad offensively. And look, Matty Ryan almost put up, I want to say, about 4,000 yards this past year, and he had no receivers outside of a tight end who was probably double teamed at times.
At that point, yeah.
No true running back. So, I mean, remember that little bowling ball he used to have that went to the Super Bowl?
Michael Turner.
I mean, the days of Michael Turner. I love that guy. He played for San Diego, so I got to watch.
Yeah.
All righty, let's move on.
Sure.
We're going to combine these two. We'll talk about them separately, but we'll interchangeably because these two individuals are tied at the hip. The scene is Chicago, New York, I don't know, somewhere where the NFL is at, the 2015 NFL Draft. And on the board, we have Jameis Winston, or how do you say it?
Jameis
Winston and Marcus Mariota. And lay it out, John, who went 1-2?
It was Winston 1, Mariota 2. And I'll tell you, I'm being honest, in my write-up that year, I had them reversed. I had Mariota 1 and Winston 2.
You know, I thought they had him right with Winston 1 because I saw Winston's girth and his arm. And I'm like, guy's got a good arm, freaking great arm, and he's big. And then I saw Mariota, and I'm like, he's coming from Oregon.
Yeah.
He's coming from a pro-style pajama boy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, the Pac-10 is pajama boy football when compared to the big powerhouses. So I'm like, competition was not quite up there.
Agreed. But here's the other thing, too. I think those guys suffered from reverse racism, both of them, right? So, and I'll tell you what I mean. A lot of guys in our industry, I'll say not to talk about the NFL industry, but the fantasy industry, assumed that because Winston is black, that he was
quarterback. He can rush.
He can run. And because Mariota was white, they figured he was the pocket passer.
Isn't he Hawaiian? I think Mariota's Hawaiian.
He might be, yeah, or Tongan. I'm not sure. But they assumed, based only on skin color, and this will tell you how many hacks there are in our industry. When you looked at Winston play, that guy is slow. He's a plotter. He reminds me more of Ben Roethlisberger than Michael Vick.
Like, yeah, Big Ben to be so big, couldn't run.
Right, like maybe move in the pocket a little, you know, just to create some space, but that's it. And a big kid and a big arm. That was Winston. His major problem, of course, turnovers.
We're going to talk about that.
But Mariota, I love Mariota because he was among the beginning of the new breed of quarterbacks.
Nobody denies that talent, Big John. All right. Let me give you the details here. Marcus Mariota, within hours of Matty Ryan getting traded to the Indianapolis Colts, they signed Mariota to a 2-year contract worth $18.75 million. Now, the big assumption is he's Merle. That's when my little Spanish accent that you can't hear anymore comes in. So $18.75 million. He receives a $1.75 million. He receives about $2 million guaranteed base salary, a $5 million signing bonus, and he has a $12 million option for 2023, which is actually very cheap.
It's dirt cheap if you're the Falcons, a starting quarterback potentially for like $10 million roughly a year.
And exactly.
That's a bargain.
Let's get Jameis Winston out of the way. He also signed a 2-year contract. His is worth $28 million. Now, Jameis has not stopped playing. Marcus Mariota has been on the bench for 2 years now.
Right.
You know, $21 million in guarantees, $14 million signing bonus. I congratulate both men because both are technically speaking, busts. And Tampa Bay, Winston's career, Tampa Bay, per game average, 274 yards, 1.7 TDs. So, maybe 1 to 2 TDs and 1 interception. So he threw an interception every game. Come hell or high water, he averaged 19.56 in 20 interceptions a year. And John, when I think of interceptions, I think of the rookie, Peyton Manning. I think he had like 17 or 20 or something like that.
Oh, more than
that. Ungodly number. But here's a guy's like, hold my beer.
Listen, I love you. I listen, a lot of people underestimate how productive Winston was in Tampa Bay. The problem was he wasn't – like, it was a combination. He wasn't coached up the right way initially, and I don't know that he ever – and I'm sure it was a combination of his fault and his coaching, but look.
Whoa, hold on. I don't want to push back, but I have to ask you, though. He was with Bruce Arians, Super Bowl winning.
Not the whole time.
And offensive coordinator. No, not the whole time. Within that final year.
Yeah. What kind of numbers did he put up that year, William? He put up almost 5,000 yards.
That's right.
He had almost 40 touchdowns. The problem was he had 30 interceptions, right?
Yeah. 30 interceptions for a five-year pro at that point in time.
Agreed. But listen, my point is, I think it was a little – look, he needed to have it corrected.
I agree.
But he has talent. You can see he has talent. And literally, if you match up those first 5 years against the first 5 years of any quarterback, Winston is in the top two or three in terms of yards, touchdowns. Of course, the problem is the interceptions.
You know, John, you sound like a politician defending Paul Ryan, a so-called conservative. And they go, look at his voting record. He votes 80% of the time with conservatives. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. Can't argue that. The problem is the 20% is what messes up 80% of the country.
Oh, and listen,
interceptions are – pick six.
I'm with you. I'm with you. But what I meant to say is, when you see a talent like that, like, look, if you had that attitude, you would have given up on Brett Favre after 5 years.
No. Come on. There is no comparison with Winston and 30 interceptions in the year five career. And I'm not mocking Winston because I agree with you. I'm like, this kid had too much talent for somebody not to literally take him under the wing and just hit him every time they – remember when we were kids, we get hit when we messed up. Just smack him on the head.
No, but I mean they grab you by the face mask.
Yeah, exactly.
But listen.
Nobody did that.
Yeah, except for Sean Payton, right? That's what we have to keep in mind. When he went to the Saints, hold on.
What did they specifically do for the audience? They scaled back the offense and made him a game manager. So they kind of took him out of his game.
Yeah, but listen, he spent a year apprenticing under Drew Brees, which he needed, right? People assume when you're the number one overall that you should go right into the game. Winston clearly needed to sit behind a veteran for a season. Because are you trying to tell me that in one season without playing, he corrected all those mistakes all of a sudden he can tell?
But nobody knows if he did, John, because he only played seven games before he went down to ACL.
Agreed. But how did he do in those seven games last year?
Phenomenal. His stat line was 167 yards per game, two touchdowns, though, and 0.43 interceptions. So he reduced that by, 5, 6, 7?
A lot.
Yeah. Actually, he reduced it by over a point. And when you're talking 1.2 per game, that's why I have grown to love Jameis Winston, because I didn't like him. I don't like these prima donnas who do bad things. And he did bad things, and we all know that, in college, and then come out. But it makes me happy, though, when they actually turn it around.
Right.
And so he's become somebody I now root for, and I'm happy. Yeah. He's a good role model. But it's only been seven games. He's coming off an ACL tear midseason 2021. He was the team's fallback option. Became a bit of a game manager, as I stated. But to your point, what is impressive when you look at it is 14 touchdowns and 3 interceptions.
That's amazing. In essentially what amounts to 1 year worth of play time. Now, Mariota, on the other hand, to your point.
Well, hold on. Let's stick with Jameis Winston. Okay. Final question here. Sean Payton is retired. Dennis Allen, the defensive coordinator, got the job as a head coach. He's a defensive coordinator. Luckily, I don't know if it's luckily or not, but they keep the same offensive coordinator, Pete Carmichael. So my question to you, Big John, is how will this new head coaching staff, even though they have the current offensive coordinator, work with Jameis Winston? Will they slowly try to expand him?
No.
Or keep him where he's at?
No. What are defensive coordinators who become head coaches famous for?
Oh, shutting down the offense.
Our quarterback will not lose a game for us.
Exactly.
Think of any defensive head coach, Bill Parcells, Bill Belichick, think of all these defensive – the guys who were defensive coordinators became head coaches. Their mantra is do not turn over the ball. We don't care if you can't throw it deep. Just don't – think of Trent Dilfer. Don't turn over the ball. So do I expect them to get crazy like Tampa Bay again all of a sudden, the no risk it, no biscuit offense? No, it's not going to be like that with Jameis Winston. I think
you
this
bring
is,
up a good point, though.
Yeah.
People forget, though. I mean, that's a Sean Payton offense. That's a West Coast offense. And what people forget about the West Coast, Steve Young said so well. He said when they talked to him about throwing deep, he came back and said, look, I throw deep. I throw 20 yards. That's pretty deep. He goes, 20 yards? He goes, yeah, my job is to get the ball in the hands of the receiver.
Right.
They're the ones who make it. So I say that with the fact that that will play to his strengths, John. But just as a – I'm going slightly off topic, but I want to get your opinion. Is it's such a color-by-number offense. Isn't it refreshing to see a head coach like Bruce Arians go to their quarterback? You've got the arm, baby. I'm going to let you launch it. And that's part of the rapport. Or is it repertoire or rapport?
Rapport.
That's part of the rapport. So I guess, I don't know, I'm digressing, but to me, one of the most beautiful passes was that final touchdown pass that Tom Brady threw. And I'm not a Tom Brady fan, but when I see that, I'm like, that's football.
Yeah, listen.
Thomas Fijar.
There's the romance of the bomb, right? Like the
Hail Mary.
Like the old Raiders, right? Like right. They were famous. Who was the Mad Bomber? Daryl LaMonica for the Raiders.
Oh, yeah.
Joe Capp for the Vikings and all these old school guys. Joe Namath. Like, as good as Joe Namath was, people forget for his career, his touchdown to interception ratio was 1-1. Different era.
I'm just going to say, poor Joe. He's in the Hall of Fame. See, that proves the Hall of Fame is not just about the numbers. Because his numbers were nothing special. He's in for guaranteeing that victory.
And also because he was super talented. But my point is that when you look at these guys, like, you have to take into account that the football changed, right? So with the mobile quarterback, then as soon as defenses said, okay, we can't bump these receivers, we can't chuck these receivers, we can't grab them, what are we going to do? We have to kill the quarterback. I told you every podcast so far, every NFL team right now, the only way they can keep up is by having two destructive pass rushers on the same line, whether it's a linebacker and a defensive end, two edge guys, whatever. You need two. Having one doesn't work anymore, right? So you need an Aaron Donald, you need a Von Miller. You need killers at both ends. You need a Shaq Barrett. You need a JPP. Right?
I agree.
What do you need? So that means quarterbacks just don't have the time, unless they're very mobile. They don't have the time to sit there and launch the 40 yards in the air. Very few of them can do it. Aaron Rodgers.
All right, then. Okay. So who is the greatest deep ball passer in the league? I'm not talking West Coast. And then we're going to move on to Marcus Mariota.
I'll give you my top three. Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, and Deshaun Watson.
You know, I haven't, you know, let's be honest. The Texans were losers, so I can't remember the last time I saw Deshaun Watson.
Oh, Deshaun Watson to DeAndre Hopkins or Deshaun Watson to Will Fuller. These were
I'm looking forward to seeing it. And look, let's be honest. He was given $250 million guaranteed. Anything below average is a failure and a bust.
So anything
below, a lot of pressure on him.
Anything below great is a bust.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to say average. Anything below great is going to be a bust.
Exactly. All right. Let's move on here to Marcus Mariota.
Yeah.
Okay. We talked about how much he signed for. Now, his career, he was number two behind Jameis Winston.
Yeah.
You've already described him, and you're right. He was a good scrambler, able to move and advance the ball with his feet. And that's kind of what, like, you're right. That was a bit of a flip of what the stereotype and people were actually writing about.
Yeah.
And in fact, dude, I got to tell you, in America, so I'm researching, you know, and I come across Brissett. Oh, my gosh, I apologize. What's his first name?
Jacoby.
Jacoby Brissett. So somebody sat there and said, they were talking about the immobile quarterbacks or something to that fact. And somebody said, no, no, you're wrong. They had Jacoby Brissett. You know, and somebody, obviously it was bam, bam, bam with the tweets afterwards. Oh, because he's black? Because you're right. The man was like a brick, you know? And it just shows, I laugh because I'm like, people want to call people racist without looking in the mirror, you know? And there's that time when just stupid mistakes are made that are harmless. It's just funny. Anyway, Marcus Mariota, injury prone. He's never played a full 16-game season, John. So hang on to that thought because I got a question about that. He was dumped by Vrabel after one season. And so he was replaced halfway through the season, actually. And I'm not a big Vrabel fan, so I'm a bit biased because I am I'm not a Mariota fan, but he seems like a nice guy. It's based off everything I've seen and read.
Right.
It seems to me that there was just a disconnect there. He got shipped out because I think Marcus Mariota and I think he got shipped out because Vrabel maybe didn't think he was tough enough or he's getting hurt.
I think so too. I think it was that he got shipped out because he was injury prone.
Exactly. He was 29-32 as a tight end. Yeah. And then in 2020 signed the back of Dave Carr. So real quick though, you were answering it, the injury prone label.
Yeah. The injury prone label is what got him in Tennessee. And then he goes to the Raiders, tries to resurrect his career a little bit as a backup. I think he did very well in that role. They had special like red zone packages for him where he could do the RPO with Jacobs and run, you know, carry it, you know, like almost like a Taysom Hill sort of role.
Yeah.
So, and he did fairly well like that. Now, the good thing about him going to – but he also got hurt in Vegas as a backup. He also got hurt. So,
remember, too, David Carr, the last two or three off seasons
– Derek.
Derek. No, I knew that. Derek Carr.
You keep referring to his older brother. Yes.
I feel Derek bad. The kid should have been great if the offensive line had ever existed.
Well, blame the parents because who would name their – both their starting quarterback children with the first names that begin with D. They're just asking for trouble.
But Derek Carr, the last two or three years, his name has always been on the potential trading block.
No, and that's so unfair. So unfair.
But my point is, I thought Mariota went there possibly thinking he'd have a shot through injury or whatnot.
He may have. But what's good about him here is he's going to Atlanta, so he's going to probably – look, the only competition he has there right now
– Well, hold on. What's the connection with him in Atlanta?
Oh, Arthur Smith. He was his offensive coordinator or quarterback's coach in Tennessee. Now he's the head coach in Atlanta. And I was going to say that bodes well for him. Going to ostensibly be the starter in Atlanta on a contract that's only $9-10 million a year, beauty. Like, even if you just get him to be a placeholder for 2 years where you're competitive and you're not expecting much, that's worth the $10 million in today's market.
Yeah, theoretically, they could keep him for 2 years, and let's say he's a legit number one. But let's say – but you know they're going to draft a rookie.
They should, I mean,
this year or next year. So that's coming whether they like it or not. So that gives him leverage. Hey.
The Falcons talk about – and it's not hindsight because a lot of people, myself included, have been saying this for 2-3 years now. They should have drafted Matt Ryan's replacement long ago, but they kept holding on to this ridiculous notion that they were a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah, but they had that one guy, that general manager, the guy with the glasses, one of those intelligent-looking yuppies.
Yeah, Dimitrov.
Yes. And I think they kept him on maybe 5 years too long.
Yeah, listen, last year was their chance. Like, I know Kyle Pitts is going to be a great player in this league. He's a super talented tight end. He's one of these guys that redefines the position potentially. But when you have a chance to draft, when you're that high up and you have a chance in a quarterback-rich draft, and listen, if their scouts were any good, they saw what all of us saw, that this year was a weak quarterback class. So to think that you could count on Matt Ryan carrying your team, I think was very short-sighted. Last year, I was calling for them to not draft Pitts and to draft a quarterback. They didn't. So now they're in the position they're in because of this. Mariota, I think, is going to – if he starts, he'll have a chance to prove himself. If he stays healthy, he'll probably be a competent quarterback, especially at the price point. Saves them some money so they can load up next year. They'll have cash next year once that dead money of Ryan's rolls off the cap this year.
That gives Mariota instead of the play too.
There you go. So I think it's a good move for him. I think it's a good risk.
Yeah, I like Mariota. He's not had the easiest career, but hey, you got to produce if you want to stay in this league.
Yep. Yep.
And he just was not producing on the bench too much. All right. So let's cut to the chase here. I reviewed all the quarterbacks today. Yeah. And the reality is there are pretty much only two left. And we've already discussed one, Baker Mayfield over past podcasts. Yeah. And we haven't really talked too much, but we've mentioned Jimmy Garoppolo. I like that. Garoppolo. So briefly, we know he played through a torn labrum in terms of Baker Mayfield. He does not have a no-trade clause. The Seahawks are the big rumor, but I was reading some reports saying they may not even push hard. What happens to Baker Mayfield this year? Do you think he holds out or sticks it out? Is willing to be a team member? Or do you think he's going to pull an OBJ and say I'm gone?
He can't stay, and I don't think Cleveland wants him. They just re-signed. They just signed Case Keenum to be the backup.
No. I get that, Big John, but I'm talking about trading him now versus maybe you hold on to him, somebody gets hurt, and maybe Cam.
Oh, no, you don't need that in the locker room. You need to unload the contract, too. You need to get rid of the contract because they're going to be stuck for so much for Watson. They're going to need money to make in-season maneuvers, whether it's injury call-ups, whatever. They got to get rid of him. They should get rid of him. I wouldn't be too proud for them. Look, if Matt Ryan commands a third, if you get a third for Mayfield, that even is a good haul for them if they get a third for Mayfield at this point because the whole league knows they can't keep him. They'll probably have to cut him. If they can't trade him, they'll have to release him.
What's that? That's like an $18 million cap hit? I have no clue. I can't remember.
Well, he's on his rookie contract, so it's not that big, right? So, but because he's also on his rookie contract, Mayfield is an intriguing target. Now, would the Seahawks take him? That's the one that makes logical sense. He should probably go to the Seahawks. That's probably his best shot, or the Panthers. Those are the two landing spots that he has the chance to compete and win for. I don't see it happening in Carolina because they're probably going to draft a quarterback, probably Willis. So they'll have a kid for the future. Now, because he's on his rookie contract, that means you can control Mayfield, I think, for this season, the next season, right?
Yeah, this season.
Yeah. So it makes sense for the Seahawks. If I'm the Seahawks, if the price is right in terms of a trade, you bring in Mayfield to compete with Drew Lock, and you just say, may the best man win. And then and they're both on their rookie contracts.
No, here's what I see. It won't happen, but it should. Is I'm like, hold on. I mean, hold on to him and through his agent with the understanding, look, don't come in. We're going to pay you. And then they wait it out because either, they're going to get nothing and maybe even have to release him, as you said, and eat that. But if they hold on to him, come closer to training camp, somebody gets hurt somewhere else, they can ship him off, and then maybe have an incentives-laden type contract. It goes the second round, yada, yada, yada. Or if that doesn't work, but there's still no value, hey, sit down. Come trade deadline, we're going to be pushing you. If not, at that point, cut him.
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest with you, because quarterbacks being moved mid-season are a tough sell because – they have to pick up an entire offense. It's more difficult.
Well, no. It could be a situation where he's not going in as a starter, but as a they should. I can't see any team trading for Baker Mayfield to be a starter in midseason.
You're right. But let me ask you this: if the Browns go to the Seahawks and say, "Send us a fifth round pick, and you can have Baker Mayfield," you're not doing that deal.
You know what? Without knowing their salary cap in depth and what I have acted, the blood, sweat, and tears I put into it, because I do think in a move like that, it does come to that. Because, look, I'm sorry. Only the nerds with no personalities can sit there and not have an ego and just crunch away. Everybody in that industry has an ego. And then you're talking about giving up on a first-round draft pick who, when you look at it honestly, what was it, 20 years before he took them to a playoff game and then played hurt? And you're right. He's immature. But he's no more immature, which is what drives me crazy, than an OBJ, than a Watson, than anybody else.
Well, I don't,
Watson wasn't immature. He just wanted too much of a booty call.
Yeah. Listen, I'm not sold that Mayfield deserved, if that's a thing, to be the number one overall pick. I'm not sure of that.
I get that, yeah.
But at the same time, I don't think he sucks either. I think.
All right, then. Where do you think he goes if he gets traded?
Seattle.
All right. What about Jimmy Garoppolo? Something interesting about him that I found today. I had to double check it, but his trade clause is his no trade clause is gone.
Yeah.
It ended at the start of the new season. It's a dried up window. Just like I think Garoppolo. People forget, and I'll back it up by saying this. His last contract that he signed was one of the biggest in NFL. Yes. And it was because when healthy, he is upper echelon. But the problem became immediately clear. He's not a durable quarterback to last year, full season.
Yeah.
You know, and this year with the thumb and then torn his shoulder in the playoff, do you think the window has passed on them moving him this year? Or do you think he still gets traded? You know, now, the difference between him and Baker Mayfield, I look at Baker Mayfield's best situation now is to go as a backup behind a Matt Ryan or somebody. But Jimmy Garoppolo, I see him as a starter.
He has to be a starter. He's not going to be a backup for anybody. I don't know. See, if you had asked me a month ago, I would have said, yeah, they got to trade him. Like, they've
committed. To who? A month ago to who?
I would have said the Colts.
Yeah, there you go.
The Colts, you know.
Who now?
Who now becomes – listen.
Well, and would the 49ers trade him to an inner conference?
I think that's the more important question. I think do the Niners trade him at all at this point? Because if they can't get – they're obviously holding out for whatever value they feel is, quote, right, whatever that is.
Let me present this to you, Big John. If they hold off until training camp, and let's say a Colt – let's say Ryan goes down with one of those 7 to 8 week, possibly all year long. Do you think Garoppolo is the kind of guy who could come in and just – they can keep a contender?
Absolutely. Because let's face it, in San Francisco, see, and I would even – I would push back a little bit on you. I wouldn't consider him upper echelon. I never have. There's a reason why – like he was stuck behind Brady – the two or three games he got in, he looked good, and people just started building this mystique around him.
Yeah, they always do that. Our era was that one backup that went on the Matt Castle,
same thing, right?
So we're on the same page there. But when he played, when I saw him play,
he was solid.
Well, it wasn't that he was solid. He had this coolness about him. Right. He's a good-looking guy. He just fits the profile.
Yeah, he's Jimmy. What was his nickname? Jimmy GQ or whatever.
Yeah, there you go. But the point is, he just seemed cool to calm and collected. You don't see that.
I don't disagree with you. That's why I think if he's in the right situation where he's, again, more of a game manager, more when he's got a solid running game. Look, what does San Francisco do? They run the ball a lot, right? And they have gadget plays. They have Deebo Samuel lining up in the backfield.
But
they
don't think that's just part of the game now?
There's still times when you want to put the game in the hands of your quarterback. You look at Patrick Mahomes. Right, you look at Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, you don't think they did that?
No, not at all.
I just thought it was trying to keep him freaking upright. They started becoming more of a balanced team in how they used people.
No. They've always had that running back by committee in San Francisco the last couple of years. That's why,
but he's been there for like 4 years now, hasn't he?
I'm not disagreeing with you. That's why I never viewed him as upper echelon. I don't think he could put a team on his back. I don't think he was the type of guy to throw for 350 yards a game and four touchdowns. I never saw that out of him. Compare him even to a Kirk Cousins.
You never saw that guy, or do you think we had enough tape to actually see that guy? Because he's really played that one year. Wasn't it his first year there with San Fran? Was pretty much he's been literally injured almost every year.
Yeah, that's another problem, right? There's a lot.
That's why I lost faith.
Yeah,
year two.
Yeah. Look, I think he deserves a shot. I think he's had his flashes where you could say he can run a balanced team. He could take a good team to the playoffs. Can he take an average team to the playoffs? Probably not.
Well, he took the 49ers to the playoff that, or Super Bowl that 1 year against the Chiefs.
They were a good team.
Yeah. Well, they had a great defense, too.
Yeah.
And that's when George Kittle was still – he was discovered, but he was still showing the league what he could do.
Yeah.
But that said, I'm anxious to see Trey Lance, and we'll see how that goes.
And
but,
look, it may behoove them for another season.
That's one of the questions I have for you. Yeah. Do you believe the reports that are coming out? I think it may have been Schefter or one of those type of insiders that said that the team may have overestimated Trey Lance's capacity to take the starting job this year.
Absolutely, yeah. Because look, they thought when they took Trey Lance out of a D2 school, what were they thinking? I'm sure they had visions of Josh Allen version 2 dancing in their head. The big kid with the strong arm, don't discriminate against him because he didn't play against top competition. Look, how many Josh Allens are you going to run into? I'm not saying anything about Trey Lance. I haven't seen enough of him to determine. But they obviously went all in on him. And that's a risky play for the 49ers because they traded up to get him. They didn't have to get – they could have sat where they were and probably they would have had Mac Jones, right? And we saw how good he was in New England, right?
So, I don't know.
Huh?
He's not a bust, that's for sure. We don't know how good he is yet. But, no, I agree with you. And because of that, do you think that they would be willing to keep Jimmy G as a starter after it's all been Trey Lance for one more year?
Keep him as a backup.
Yeah, it's not like he has a choice. He's going to be paid awfully well, and then they could always still move him.
Yeah, they should keep him. Look, at this point, if they can't make the guy happy and they can't get the value they want, like, look, what would you think they need to move Jimmy G? A third? A second? A fourth?
At this point, yeah. Because if they had been one of the first teams to move him, they could have maybe gotten a first or second, you know, depending what team. But now I think if they get a third.
They're lucky if they get a third. I think nobody's.
Do you believe that they are as good of friends and they all get along as can be there?
I think much like we said about Ryan, I think Jimmy G's professional. So yeah. If there was a problem, you'd never hear about it.
I just think he's just too damn good looking. That's my issue with Jimmy.
And that's why we hate him, goddammit.
That's right. I can see his aunt squeezing those cheese. Come here, Jimmy. Yeah, okay. Moving on now. Oh, real quick, just a little tidbit. Any comment on this? Which team will be the first one to get a QB? Here's your teams in terms of a long-term franchise. The Commanders, Seahawks, Panthers, Texans, Colts, Buccaneers, and even the Titans, if you want to throw them in their Super Bowl window.
You mean
do you think
the draft?
Any one of these teams
you mean in, the draft?
In the draft or if an opportunity arises? And I ask, well, not the Colts anymore because of Manny T. But I guess what I'm asking is, do you think a team that's looking for a franchise quarterback will get it in the draft or they're still willing to trade for somebody?
I think the Panthers are taking a quarterback in the first round, probably Willis. And
where's Pickett go then?
I don't know.
I know.
To be honest with you, he may go to Pittsburgh. Like, I know they have Trubisky there and all that. I think you take your chance. And he's a hometown guy. I think it's a great story that if he ends up with Pittsburgh, I think it's
a small college. Did you ever see him play?
I did. I'm not going to call myself an expert on him. But listen, there's no outstanding quarterbacks this year. Coming out, in my opinion.
Right, I read that.
Right, yeah. So I think the Panthers have to take one of them, whether they take Pickett or Willis or whatever.
Do you think Sam Darnold's that bad? I don't think Sam Darnold's ever had any damn good coaching since college.
That's true, but look, he came out too early, probably. He came out as a junior, or was it as a sophomore? But he came out a year too early at the league.
Is that a Tommy Maddox?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's get on to our pop culture, sports and politics, and NFL free agency news all rolled up into one, Big John.
Woo!
And I want everybody to take a knee for Colin Kaepernick.
Oh, man, you conservatives cannot let that go.
Oh, no, it's nothing to do with conservatism. That's part of history now.
Okay.
Never forget history. That's the only way we'll move forward. That's, I mean, look at, I mean, World War One. You think we would have learned? You know, whoop, here's World War Two. And even then, I still worry. Anyway, Colin Kaepernick. How did we get here? Obviously, Colin Kaepernick is an activist. Started with 49ers. Had a promising career, looked kind of average his final 2 years, and like he wasn't growing like he wanted him to grow. Then discovered a knee through a veteran. Take a knee, Colin. Took a knee and forever changed
right.
the political landscape. Now, since then, he's earned quite a bit of money. Now he is in some workouts, and it's like he's throwing it out there that he's back. He remember he compared the NFL to slavery. Is this politically correct or legit to sit there and criticize him? Because my first thought process was he's 34 years old, hasn't played in years. Like, you know, he wasn't crescendoing up.
Right.
You know?
Question,
John?
Look, you have to look at the totality. Now, is he in a position to get back into the NFL? Probably not. Like you said, he's been out of football way too long. And no matter how good shape you're in, William, we all know, if you haven't been in the training camps, if you haven't gotten hit, if you haven't been in the speed of the game, odds are you're not in a position to come back. The way I see it is, Eric Dickerson, one of the greatest runners of all time, took a year off. He wasn't the same when he got back. And he was one of the greatest of all time. If we think a quarterback can take, what is it now, 4 or 5 years off, 6 years, whatever it's been, and all of a sudden just say, I'm going to waltz in at 34 and start over again, it's not going to happen. But we'd also be kidding ourselves if we didn't admit that he was essentially blackballed by the NFL. There's no doubt in my mind.
I don't think it matters, Big John, because – there is no team – well, you can never say never. I mean, I sat there and said, hey, I've never seen anybody sign or hire somebody who has racism charges out against somebody. And look at Brian Flores got hired by the Steelers, you know?
Yeah, but – and you're right. But I think he initially was blackballed, if we're being honest.
That's what I'm going to ask you. So if we are being honest, what team would sign him with the circus that he would bring? It's like you'd have to walk on eggshells.
So my take
is, there, call it what you want, but there was no blackballing because no sane team would hire him.
What about the
two trade offers he spurned and not willing to be a backup and wanting more money in Seattle?
I don't know about those, to be honest with you. I know I've heard about those. I've seen them in your research that you've done for the show. But I never thought much of Kaepernick after the league got used to him. So when he first started, he was like this crazy hybrid who he had a strong arm and he came out of nowhere. But then again, so did Rick Meyer, if you remember him. His first year.
He was number one or number two overall.
He won Rookie of the Year over Drew Bledsoe that year, right? So, I mean, so once the NFL said, okay, once the defense had seen him, right, it was not like he was Patrick Mahomes or anything like that, right? So he was his novelty wore off, and he was very quickly becoming an average quarterback. Now, having said that, was he still talented enough to be a backup somewhere? Hey, we just talked about Marcus Mariota, and anybody who thinks Colin Kaepernick at the same point in their careers was less talented than Marcus Mariota is lying to themselves.
Back then. Right? But at the end of the day, answer the question there, Big John, with him being the circus coming to town.
I wouldn't touch him now.
How can they blackball him if the only logical move is, I mean, like, again.
You misunderstood. I said he was blackballed. The initial reason he was never on a team was he was being blackballed. And a lot of this kneeling, the objections to kneeling, which honestly I never understood, and I'll put this on conservatives from day one, William, their reaction to that guy kneeling during the national anthem was the most over-the-top, fake outrage that I've ever seen in my life. That to react that way to a guy kneeling Or who was the safety that also got a blackballed?
You know, John, that's because there's certain things in life that some people take more seriously. Like you asking them, again, we'll go back to the immigrant and then we'll move on. It's we view the patriotism of this country over where we came from, originated from. And I was blessed. I was born an American citizen. But, you know, so I seen that first.
Are you sure? Can I see your green papers, please? Yeah. You keep claiming this. I'm not sure.
But at the end of the day, that's. Honestly, part of that has been lost by this country. That So when they sit there and see that, and they see the planes going overhead, a game is traditionally seen as bringing people together, keep the politics out. There, it has. We've talked about that, so we have our website. But that's how it's traditionally been until the last couple of years.
No, I disagree with you because prior to 2000, you didn't even have the national anthem sung at NFL games.
No, but at big events, the Super Bowl and things like that.
Yeah, know, but like yeah. You're.
But that's when people watch. Remember back then. You're still throwing 30 million tops back then.
Yeah.
Not counting the playoffs and
yeah. But I'm saying, like, the weekly games did not have the national anthem played in them, right? So, first of all, people who say it's always been done this way just aren't – they're just making assumptions that are untrue. The fact that he knelt was not disrespectful. Like, you know what would have been disrespectful? If he dropped his pants. Or if he grabbed...
To you, it wasn't respectful. To you, it wasn't disrespectful. But to others, it was.
How, though? I'm struggling to understand because...
No, because you're a libertarian.
No, but listen. If I saw...
This is where I get to you, libertarians. You always
wait a second.
On the outer of objectivity.
No, yeah. But let me also tell you something else, right? If one of your conservative friends bowed before Trump, or kneeled before Trump like they're wont to do.
That's apples and oranges.
Is that disrespect?
No, that's apples and oranges. You're taking it completely out of context. The flag represents something that is eternal.
But what did he do to the flag? What did
he do,
though?
You're trying to theme that by comparing that to a human. You know, that's what makes America special.
I'll take a human over a flag any day. Yeah.
It's not about the flag. It's what the flag represents. See, that's, again, the altar.
I mean, the flag that represents freedom
the
of expression.
Of libertarianism that puts themselves up here while they look at us down here.
You said what the flag represents. You mean the flag that represents free expression?
It doesn't mean they're right. It doesn't mean they're right.
I didn't say he was right, but like.
But I was explaining to you what it meant to them. It doesn't mean they're right. That's the first thing anybody – if you want to know somebody served, one of the very first things they'll tell you when you thank him, which I don't like people doing to me, but is that – well, first of all, it was a job. I don't know. You know what? At the end of the day, it's just a situation in which they were wrong, the conservatives, but understanding why they did it. It's kind of like that –
Well, okay. If you admit they were wrong –
I admit all the time when I believe that.
But I'm good with you. Yeah. If you admit they were wrong, I understand their motive, right? I'm not saying I don't understand their motive, but it was a knee-jerk outrage that really.
But John, we're right. It's racism is one of those. I always tell people, if you want to have a fight started, because there will be no peace early on, no matter who is right. It started a race war, you know, because it's 1,000% built on emotion of anger that turns into hate. It's one of the best mob mentality tactics you can use. And that's what Kaepernick was used for. And then our side reacted as they did, and then became a battle of ignorance. Because at the end of the day, as you and I both know, the politicians were still getting richer, still consolidating power. And you and I will smoke a cigar and complain about it.
Did you burn your Nikes?
Yeah.
Did you burn your Nikes?
No, I still got. But you know what? They make them so damn cheap now. I tossed one in the shower and all the waffles came off. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me, Nike. Anyway, do you think it's a fair assessment then if teams don't want to give him a shot, or do you?
Yes, I think it's absolutely fair.
Now,
he's too much of a circus right now. And
but hasn't he always been? That's my point. From day one, hasn't he been?
No, yes. So I'm very pragmatic in the sense that the guy's a distraction. Whether he was justified or not, whether the conservatives or Trump pointing him out as what's wrong with sports, all that nonsense, for whatever reason, I'm not even saying who was right and who was wrong, he's a distraction. You don't want him on your team if he's a distraction. I get it. So to that extent, I have no problem if nobody even offers him a tryout. I have no problem with that. Of course, he'll spin it that it's because people are still blackballing him for his political beliefs. So,
Right. But that's neither here nor there. Let's get back to Kaepernick. And let's move on to the mainstream media here. I have my two cents and I'll pass it to you to close the night. So here's a quote from a reporter who is talking about, well, look, you know, the Saints were ready to give three first rounders up for Deshaun Watson. So they're comparing Deshaun Watson, you know, his physical, what he brings to the table, to what Colin Kaepernick brings to the table as equal. And he goes on to say, they were willing to trade 3 years worth of draft picks for a pastor who was being deposed in court in between meetings with them. They should be willing to give Kaepernick the shot he deserves. So that's a reporter said that. And my point is, all things equal, there is no equality in those two in terms of their physical peakness right now. Yeah. And I bring this up because to me, it's like, this is why it's trash journalism, a lot of it, you know, because it's like, you have to be objective. And I get your logic, but then you have to understand the truth through facts. The fact is, or the facts will show us the truth. He's younger. He's a more fitter. He came in because of injury, but he could have started right away. It took Kaepernick a while. So to me, they're like two different physical specimens, you know, and that's why I viewed it as yellow journalism. Your final thoughts on that, Big John?
Well, of course, it's nonsense, because I'll even go back to basic principles. Nobody is owed anything. Like, why do we think that because Deshaun Watson got paid, it means that every black quarterback has to get paid? I don't understand.
I don't think it's because he's black. I think it's because he's just the next domino to fall.
But I'm saying that journalist who drew the comparison between Deshaun Watson and Colin Kaepernick was just someone who either doesn't understand football at all or is trying to make a social justice point on the basis of wrong information. It's the same
for a bad interpretation.
It's like women who keep thinking there's a gender pay gap. There isn't. No matter how much proof you show to these people that it doesn't exist.
I just think all the ladies left the room.
Yeah, let them leave the room. It's okay. As you know, I'm a data scientist. To me, it all comes down to those numbers, maybe to a fault, William. You know, sometimes I don't consider the human element. But, like, when you looked at Deshaun Watson, he's entering the peak of his career. He hasn't done anything criminally wrong. So when you compare his, say, off-the-field situation to Kaepernick, okay, maybe you could say neither one of them committed a crime, whatever, right?
But importantly, Watson would want to keep quiet and low-key versus –
Well, yeah, Watson wasn't looking to make a political statement. But the point is that why would – see, it's so incredibly racist of that journalist that to say just because these two guys are black and in his mind they both did something, quote, wrong. So in the Kaepernick situation, he's equating taking a knee and being the victim of outrage to be less worse than the accusations, and that's all they are, of these women against Deshaun Watson, mainly because it's a sexual thing. And even if all these turn out to be 22 consensual things, if all 22 tend to be ambulance chasing, excuse me, this reporter would likely say Deshaun Watson is the criminal here. Why is he getting $230 million? And poor Colin Kaepernick can't get a backup role with the Saints or whatever. It's drawing the line based on race. They're both black. So therefore
– I think it's more ideology as a whole.
I think it's
– this is a racial component of that ideology.
Maybe. But I'm saying I think it's more the race thing, because don't forget, he's talking about owners that are all white. So and coaches who are largely white in the NFL, saying that sort of caste system is what's preventing Colin Kaepernick from getting in.
Right. And Big John, I think we will leave it at that.
Any okay.
Final words?
Any final words? No.
There you have it, people.
I've talked too much as it is.
Yeah. Well, it was a lively debate. It was good to read. It's good to still see Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota on the field or back starting. And it's good to see Matty Ryan with a natural shot in a playoff. And it's always fun to talk Kaepernick, people. And check out sportsgrumblings.com for all our latest content information and podcasts. And with that, Big John and everybody else, we bid you adieu.
Bye-bye, y'all.